You know, thank you for your partnership. We've been for a long time. You would go over here and kind of give me an update on what we're doing with the Economic Development Fund and give you more of an in-depth look at that. You know, we do report quarterly to you, provide a written report every quarter. But we thought it would make some sense to come over and spend some time and kind of delve into this a little bit deep with you and then answer any questions you might have at this point in time. So with that, I'll just turn it over to Shavi, and he can go through the presentation with you and answer any questions you might have.
Thanks, everyone. I'm Shavi Frivola. I'm the Director of Entrepreneurship at Ready. Just to give you some background, the context of the Economic Development Fund was approved with the 2012 Congress Association last item there, $7 million in the Economic Development Fund. Next slide, please. The structure of the fund is $5 million of those were trusted to Ready to administer and invest in companies that would create local jobs and grow the economy in Rochester. The application process and approval process is as follows. There's an investment committee form of Ready board members, city administrators, and local business leaders that take applications, review them, and make an investment recommendation. Depending on the threshold of the investment recommendation, the Ready board can approve that if it's less than $75,000. If it's more than that, it requires city council approval. Over $150,000, it also requires a public hearing. We can put up $250,000 per company. We've done so in three occasions. You have copies of the quarterly reports that we file every quarter with the city. And the some numbers that I'm showing here do not match because the quarterly report closed at the end of December. Those are the most updated numbers. The fund initiated its activity in mid-2013. Since then, we had 45 complete applications that we reviewed and we made recommendations on those. The total ask combined of those 45 recommendations are $6.3 million. We funded 15 companies to date for a total combined of $1.8 million. And the four of those investments fundings are loans, traditional loans, notes, or straight equity. We make 3 to 4 investments roughly on average every year, and the dollar amount combined is about $400,000 a year. This is the portfolio of fund recipients that we have today. One second. I'll trust that you recognize some or most of those companies. And in terms of one last thing, that this is the last company, the companies we invested in 2017 were Cranovation, Spark, DJ, Period, and Smart Back Food Solutions. In terms of results of the fund or metrics, if you'd like to the next slide, please. For the loan investment part, there are, of those companies, there are 11 active companies in the portfolio that have either loans that have not been repaid or equity. Three companies have exits or repayments, and we had one write-off. Most of the industry sectors the fund has invested in are healthcare and technology. I said $1.8 million almost. And those companies have then gone on and raised private capital to the tune of $72.5 million. That's a 40 times leverage factor. In terms of jobs, those companies show that they have created 90 jobs. And in terms of how combined space these companies have taken in Brussels, it's about 50,000 square feet. So the size of a medium-sized company will come all of them together. In addition, 56%, a little over half of these companies are owned or minority-owned, and 63% of them have a product that they're selling. So at the moment they apply, not only they have a product ready to apply, but currently a little over half, two-thirds of them have, are selling products. Next slide, please. We also have the ability to make grants. And we use most of those grants were to build the infrastructure upon which then these companies could work on. For instance, the accelerator, to build out the expansion of the and hiring the coordinator of the accelerator, which it was me, and if it weren't for the fund, I guess I wouldn't be here. And the GMP laboratory, the advanced product incubator, that is also supposed to be also helping build infrastructure for those companies. It totals about $1 million. Then these grants have brought in an additional $2.8 million, another 3X factor, on additional money. We created 7 direct jobs, and it accounts for about 8,000 square feet in Rochester. 2 more data points: the accelerator has been housed with 46 companies, and the advanced product incubator, the GMP laboratory that we talked in the first point, has already had one spin-off. It's called Rion Health, and it's housed in the biobusiness building. All in all, when you account for grants, loans, investments, the Economic Development Fund currently can account for about 150 jobs and about $103 million investment. It's hard to get to that number because the one slide back, please. Some of those, we make a big effort to not double count because some are companies that stay in the main accelerator but also have received the Economic Development Fund. This is the most relevant account, about 150 jobs and a little over $100 million in investments. Next slide, please. I want to show you 3 or 4 examples of what do these companies do and where they are and how they look like. This is Legend Laboratories. It's a they make cells for researchers. We were able to give them a loan in 2016 to open a facility a little over 3,000 square feet in northwest part of town. They, with that money and their own capital, they opened the facility and began sales with 2 different lines of products and repaid it with interest in mid-2017. They currently have 3 jobs. Next slide, please. Region Theranostics is a biotechnology firm that was initially in the biobusiness building. They were constrained there, they couldn't grow more. So they applied and we gave them a loan to expand its operations and move to the 41st Street building. That was in 2015. They tripled their footprint in Rochester and increased their FTE to about 12. And they're on track to repay their loan this month or the
following. Actually, we just got the check today.
We did, right?
Yeah,
there you go.
They paid off today.
There is this Viriat, it's a biotechnology firm to help cure cancer. They have 2 ongoing clinical trials to that end. They signed last year a 25,000 square feet lease in the IBM campus, and you see a picture here. They currently have 7 FTE, but they hope to grow, or they plan to grow to 20 to 30 jobs in the next 2 years as the clinical trials develop and they bring more people on board. That'll be their manufacturing headquarters. I mean, they'll also have some research and development facilities. We made 3 economic development investments to maximize our $250,000 throughout 2017 and 18 as they kept on moving through milestones that they said they would. And Borout is a sports technology for football teams, especially they build primarily football, sorry. It's a graduate of the accelerator, and the company was founded in 2014. It came to the Economic Development Fund in 2015 asking for money to expand their sales operation and their reach and build inventory. We made a recommendation, we funded them, and a year later they came back and repaid that obligation with interest. They currently have 3 products. They were the winner last year of a national NFL startup competition. For that, they got $50,000 and a lot of connections with NFL owners. Currently have 8 FTEs. And that's mainly what I wanted to show you today. I'm happy to answer some questions you have.
All right. Questions, comments for either Gary or Zavri? Mr. Campion.
So when we look at these funds, it's always kind of interesting to talk about successful launches and exits. And do you think, this is going to sound weird to people who are maybe not in the startup realm, but do you think one failure, does that mean we're not hitting all of the candidates we should? Does that mean we're doing a pretty good job of selection and there's just that many great ideas in Rochester? Because 1 out of 16 is pretty, I mean, that's extremely successful. But can also sometimes be a sign that maybe we're not taking on all we should. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, my thought is that it's too early to tell. I think all signs point towards a low failure rate, but that will have to be presented itself with time. You're asking, are we on the right track? I think we are. You're asking, are we funding the right companies? Could we be funding more companies in Rochester? I don't know if there are many more. Now there are more now than there were in 2013, that's for sure.
Well, that's what we want to do. So
Let's say the one loss we had was the smallest investment we made. And the reason it was the smallest investment because we knew it was probably one of the larger risks that we were taking. We wanted to support, the startup, get it going, but they weren't able to, get the traction and meet the milestones. And as a result, that one didn't make it. And most of them are still, the jury is still out whether or not, they're totally making it or not. But they're all meeting milestones. And the report we send you every quarter, we try to keep you updated on what those milestones are so that, we expect to see continued progress being made so these companies get towards revenue and get towards profitability. Because once they get to profitability, then there's, the chances are pretty good that, they'll be here and stick for a long time. It's been a great program, been a great resource, and over time I would expect to see that, we'll continue to see 3 or 4 projects a year. It does start with great ideas, and we're fortunate that we live in a community where there's a lot of good people and a lot of great ideas that you can build business models around and hopefully, make successful businesses out of. So, we couldn't do without your support and this program. And obviously the voters had the foresight to include this in the sales tax renewal itself. So we're all appreciative of all that. The funds are, we're a private nonprofit, but the funds are completely segregated from all our other funds. So, we'll stand up to any test of audits or anything like that. Anybody wants to come in and, take a look at that. We made sure that we recognize these are public funds and that they'll be treated that way and be reported as such as long as we're administering the dollars.
Mr. Ruska?
Well, I think when we look back, and it's been not, just a few years, but the Economic Development Fund idea and process certainly seems to be working. We've just got a lot of smart people in this community that do a lot of great things, and we're one of the leading cities in the country per capita for patents and ideas. And I think when you look at the stuff that comes forward, it's one of the unique things about sitting on this board is you get to see some of the great ideas and the passion that these people bring forward, and to have the process that we have in place to support them and allow them to take their ideas and see what happens with them, I think is really a great thing. And there's a lot of scrutiny that goes in with this group that oversees the ideas and the requests that come in, and I think they guard it like it's their own, and they do a good job with overseeing and making recommendations, and the full board weighs in on it, and then if it needs to be based on the numbers, it comes to us or a public hearing. So I think the process is certainly working, and it's a unique thing that our city has that allows people with great ideas to take those and do something with them.
All right. Anyone else? Mr. Mayor.
Chevy, you showed a couple pictures of where are these various businesses located? I know you showed one at IBM,
yes.
Former IBM. Some are still in the Minnesota Biobusiness Center.
Yes.
And do they all, they don't all start there, but some are over at Mayo.
No, and about, I'd say that about 60% of the companies we funded, can you go back to a couple slides where there's all these logos? About 60% of the companies we fund do not come from the business accelerator. It's if they come from the accelerator, we know more about these companies. We know when they got firm, whether they're serious or not, how do they interact with each other, are the founders in it for real or not. So it really gives us an extra data point to know reassurance in those investments. Ambien is in the accelerators. Sonics is in the Keeler building. Geneticure is in Grand Rounds. Emanis, and so is CoreRoute. Emanis is on the Biobusiness Building 2, but outside the excavator. HB Healthcare Safety's main headquarters Collider. Spark DJ is also on Grand Rounds. Viriat in the accelerator, but about to move to the IBM campus. Smart Lab Code Solutions, the last one, is in the IBM campus 2. Liquid Cool Solutions is, where's it at? In
Northwest.
Highway
14.
So, concentration of companies downtown, but also a few examples of companies that have moved downtown, outside of downtown, especially if they need large footprint.
But they're staying here.
Most of them are.
Yeah.
For instance, Seed Technologies moved to Seattle, so that's another jobs loss, not an investment loss, but a jobs loss.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Anything else? Thank you for a very positive report. We look forward to future action.
Thank you.
Moving on to our next item, we have a Mayo Civic Center financial forecast update. Mr. Reimer, I think you're going to step us through this.
Absolutely. Also, we're waiting for the PowerPoint to come up. Council may recall last December when we were having the budget workshops, and we brought up and asked of me if I had looked into the finances, not specifically for 2018, but more so the, looking out into the out years, 19, 20, 21, and beyond. And so I did that. And during that process, it became clear to me that not only did I need to start learning about the budget for the Mayo Civic Center, but also understand the industry a little more, and then understand our current operating and sales model that we have in place. So I want to start with the industry, so I'll go in reverse order. First thing I learned is that this is an evolving industry. It seems like it's continually evolving. And so I think that's an important part for us to remember, is having a major center like this. If the industry continues to evolve, we need to continue to learn ourselves. Is that something that we need to pay attention to? In all of my conversations, and we'll get to this a little later, one of the things that I heard repeatedly was customer satisfaction was a cornerstone to everything that happens in the area. Partnering with your hospitality industry is extremely important, as well as the continual improvement tying back to the continual evolution of the industry. So before I go any further, I do want to say thanks to the many people and organizations I had a chance to talk with, obviously within our own organization, but starting off when I met with the leader of Experience Rochester and the Mayo Civic Center, to directors of those areas, starting there, meeting with the commission, executive committees of the Mayo Civic Center Commission, with the Experience Rochester Board, having an opportunity to talk to people individually as well as in group settings. And I just want to appreciate everyone's openness, their willingness to share information, their ideas, their opinions, what's working, what are ideas for the future. And so that's really helped provide that foundational information for me. I also had a chance to look at the 2013 report that came through by our consultant. And just look at how we're structured today, as the council may recall, but we're currently in that agreement with Experience Rochester, and that goes through, the current agreement goes through December 31st of 2019. So I will write that. So the first thing I want to do is try to understand, well, what's working? And in those multiple conversations, everyone had a focus on the Mayo Civic Center's success. Everyone wants it to be successful, which is great to hear. We obviously have an exceptional facility. A significant investment was made by the state and our community. It's a facility that we continue to be proud of. And if you look at just some of our past weekends, the place is hopping at many different times, with many different diverse events going on, it, from our sporting to concerts to our conventions. And so we really do have a great facility. Our hospitality partners throughout the community are very dedicated, obviously, to making sure that they have successful businesses and understanding that the success of the Mayo Civic Center is an important part of their mix as well. The comprehensive rebranding effort was put into place by Experience Rochester. Part of that includes the Mayo Civic Center, so you'll see that obviously in our new logo, if you will. But it's much more than just the logo. It's all the focus of the rebranding effort, man. And what it really means is to understand who our customers are, how they view us, or things that are important, or things that also may inhibit them from using our facilities. And then as part of that, or not directly part of that, we also, in parallel time, had a thorough process improvement plan going on. And so if you've ever seen the sheet that was in the commission's packet once, the first one looks like just thousands of computer wires trying to go through a transaction, and with the ultimate goal of honing that down to just a few wires connecting all the different steps. And so all these things, to me, are very positive. There's also some opportunities to improve, I would say. And the first one is to collectively define what is success to us. What does success look like? A lot of times we go right to the financial. Is it financially successful? But we have to look at operationally successful. Is it successful from a community standpoint? Is it successful from a customer satisfaction standpoint? So that's a great opportunity in front of us, is to really look at how we define success. There's always the opportunity to increase and enhance our competitiveness within the region. One thing I learned is that we're very much a region serving. There's opportunities sometimes to compete nationally, but we're really looking more within the region for this, for our facility. As part of that, look at ways of maximizing the use of the center for its intended purposes. I have a purpose there, and you can use that, but I'd say purposes. There's multiple things that happen in there. And there's a great opportunity to continue to foster a spirit of partnership in all that we do, going back to the hospitality industry, going back to the organizations of running and selling the facility. And so those are some key areas. So we started this by saying, well, the first thing I was going to do is look into the budget. I really want to provide a high-level overview. And so this is the only slide that has the dollars and cents associated with it. And just to give you how it's set up, the green column is where we're at today, 2018. So that's our approved budget. You can see where the revenues are, about 3.8, expenses of 5.7, and then carrying out into the future all the way through 2023. So key things to remind ourselves of, over the course of the last couple of years, we've added 7 different positions at the Mayo Civic Center, primarily custodian and maintenance related, but not all. Some focus on technology as well. We're going to start paying back for our guaranteed energy savings program. That's going to be over $200,000. We started a new process this year, setting aside money annually for the future replacement of some of our technology and some of our key systems there. That's a couple hundred thousand dollars as well. On the revenue side above, you can see that we're projecting about $3.8 million. And these are all within approximates and estimates. There's a variety of different sheets and forms that both Experience Rochester as well as the MCC are using to track where we are, to understand our history and where we're heading. But when you roll it up, and I asked the team at MCC to roll this up for me, revenues are going to be pretty much stable as of today going into the future. And you can see the slow growth in the expense side. It's also important to understand in the assumptions for the expense side, we did not include any additional resources than what you have today at the MCC. So what you added this year is carried through in the last 2 years. We also did not include any reductions in resources either at that point. So what does this all mean? So my recommended path forward is for us to work with an industry expert to come in, assess where we're at today, really step back, if you will, to the 2013 report, look at the things that we put in place then, and see how we're doing there. Help us define success, as I talked about. Really help us look at that quite comprehensively. Make sure that the council, make sure the commission, make sure the Experience Rochester board, the community, and all of us agree that this is what success should look like, or does look like. And then from there, I would suggest, depending on what happens there, the next phase of that would be looking at, so what's the best approach to achieve that? And ultimately, in doing so, I would suggest that some of the things that we're going to try to do is make sure that we enhance our market competitiveness. One, like I said, optimize the use of the Civic Center. Want to maximize our revenues and then limit our public expenditures, thus meaning that we continue to grow our revenues and find ways to limit the expenditure that's needed. All the expenditures that are in place there, from our hotel tax, lodging tax, transient occupancy tax, whatever you'd like to call it, it's also important to understand that that is outpacing what we thought it was going to be when we issued our bonds. And so we've been generating additional lodging tax, and so that's been a very positive thing in this from that standpoint. That concludes my brief comments on the Mayo Civic Center. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have at this point. Otherwise, what I'm looking for is if the council agrees with that path forward, then I would bring forward the appropriate documents for your consideration for your next council meeting.
Well, I agree. I'll start off just by saying I agree. It's something that we want to take a look at. I think what's encouraging here is we're looking at this from a business case perspective. We have a phenomenal facility. We've got some new variables that we're dealing with. The facility itself, the competitive market is changing. We've got more ballrooms coming online. So I think it is. It does make sense to look at this from a business perspective. What is the highest, best use of that facility in context of the rest of the marketplace? And then to some of your comments, Mr. Reimer, about achieving the least amount of impact on public expenditures, maximizing revenues, customer focus. Those are all part and parcel, I think, of any successful business. So, again, I think doing business the way we have in the past is probably not the answer going forward. So I think it would take some time, and it's well worth our time to investigate strategic ideas going forward. Mr. Hickey, then Mr. Campion.
So what would you envision roughly as a timeline for this analysis?
In my conversations to date, the initial part would take anywhere from, depending, 4 to 6 months, depending on that, on the gathering information, the conversations occur. And then the second part is it would be a potential couple-month process. So I think somewhere in the 6 to 9 months.
Right. Thank you.
I've heard to date.
All right, Mr. Campion.
So, what's the, I guess the scope, I just want to make sure we've got all avenues on the table is kind of my thought about this, because I know, you know, as you take these initiatives, sometimes they can be boxed in a little bit. I really like an analysis of the system that's happening, the system we have for projection, all the pieces that go in to making this a success. So I think I'm on board based on what I've heard. I just would like confirmation, like this is the full aspect of how we deliver the experience for events coming to the center, not just, you know, the mechanical operations of the center itself.
Yes, absolutely. And the, as we work through the proposal, there'll be much more detail about it.
I think that was the implication. Depending on today's discussion, you would come back with more detail, more refined ideas as far as going forward.
Yeah, make sure that it matches what you guys are looking for.
Yeah, Mr. Wojcik.
Let's jump back to the income and expense slide. That expense is just the direct Civic Center expense, or does that include the, there's a 2% hotel motel that's going to the Convention Visitors Bureau. Is any of that included in here? Okay, I mean, that's... So this is, we see that deficit escalating right now fairly rapidly over a few years. And that, what is the motivation here to have the Convention and Visitors Bureau and the Civic Center continue to be separate entities, or is that something that's on the table as we review this?
Well, I think everything's on the table from my standpoint. It's ultimately going to be where the council said on this. But I would suggest if we go into this, we go into it having the, if you go through the assessment with the consultant, I would suggest that you look at having them come back with.
And are there going to be checkpoints? Are there going to be opportunities for us to talk to them and discuss what we're interested in, learning more about offer possibilities?
Absolutely.
And then. A lot of us have had concerns about the 2019 and out years, and I know this came up when we were talking about potentially doing another renovation expansion there. And at the time, we were told that the out years were looking pretty good. Has anything changed from the time that we were told that the out years looked pretty good? And this data here, or is this the same data set that we're working with?
I can't speak to that point. Okay. Right when I was joining the organization, but this is the most recent that I've worked through with the team.
Okay.
I can speak to that a little bit. The original projections for 17, 18, or prior years, all of our projections and sales projections and working towards finishing out leads has. We're on track, or in many cases ahead of schedule. What we're talking about, I think, here is 2019 and beyond. Is it as good as it could be, should be? Should we be making some strategic adjustments as we go forward? And that's it. Mr. Bilderbeck.
I think I approve what you're doing, Steve. I think it makes sense. And I do also agree with the fact that everything should be open. This shouldn't be restricted whatsoever. We do know that we're going to get more competition. We see it being built within a couple blocks. And that's not going to be the only one. There's going to be many, many more. And since this came online, we've also had a couple others that have now have convention centers in town. So the market is going to get bigger. It's going to be more competitive. We need to make sure that we're doing everything we can do to make sure that we stay as much above the border than where we are. We don't want to fall any further behind, so I support moving forward, but making sure we keep all options open.
Mr. Wojcik.
And I want to make sure that the numbers that go into the revenue expenses here, I understand there are some things that absolutely should not be public. For example, our list of potential leads are information that we should obviously protect very closely. But as much as is possible, I'd like to see the numbers that go into these income and expense figures as well, and I imagine it's already available in some form or fashion.
I'll send it out to the council.
Thank you.
All right. So, any other comments? Or I think what we're looking for, Mr. Mayor, go ahead.
This is outside of the financial side, but it becomes pretty personal when I'm still recuperating from knee surgery, but when I was in there are some long hallways in that building. And I know initially we talked about somehow if somebody comes in, and you know, Bruce Snyder, one of our council members before, in the original plans, it wasn't even sure we had a drop-off point, and now we did get them cut out there. So, but when you are handicapped a bit, then you realize there's some things that probably could be better. When I came into that first time afterwards, and I had a meeting way down past the Art Center in one of those rooms, and that's a long ways to walk. And I know we talked about possibly having for folks anytime wheelchair available or something where you would call somebody. I don't know where that would happen and whether we could maybe tie in with some of the service clubs here in town to have people come, maybe when there are major events in the facility, that we would have maybe guests right there that would say, can I help you? Because if you come in the one door of that building, that's about a 3-block walk. That's hard. So I would just say, what are we doing to really look ahead? Not so much with the financial, but to make it even better in a place that says, yeah, this is a city of health and healing, and how do we help that?
So, Mr. Campion.
Yeah, there's a lot of people in this room that have a vested interest in the success of this facility. And I've noticed a little bit of trepidation about being open and having an open conversation about the operation of this facility. I would just encourage, you know, personally, that everyone gets on the record on how they're feeling and the steps they think we can be taking. These conversations are often challenging to have, and it's a real conversation about a facility that means a significant amount to our city. So I would just throw it out there that if you are concerned, the time to speak is now. It's something when we're interacting with an organization that's going to be drafted to come in and help us build a plan for success. I would be remiss if I didn't remind you that it's easiest to have influence in the beginning and it's hard to have influence at the end. So getting on the record early with your thoughts about how this can be successful is going to help this process tremendously. I think we're all, those numbers are not optimistic. I don't think anyone's sugarcoating it. I think this is a transparent process we're going to go through now that talks about the long-term sustainable budget for that facility. So I'm glad that the council is on board with that. I would definitely jump on board and support this moving forward.
Yeah, Mr. Wojcik.
So the numbers were surreal. It was a bit of a kick to the gut. I mean, it's an outstanding facility, world class. But to see some of these concerns, I very much appreciate the proactive approach that you'd have here. I do want to put a little caveat on the maximize revenues. That it is important that we have sustainable finances going forward. I'm not entirely convinced that, and I don't think it's intended this way, maximizing revenues is not entirely what I'm after. I want to maximize community benefit from the facility, which means that we're going to have a lot of groups in there that probably aren't going to contribute to revenues, but still make it a good community venue. And I know that we have sitting on the table the prospects of building a new arena there, and my take on this, and anyone on the council is free to speak against this, is that is completely dead at this point until we get through this process. Sounds like we have broad consensus on that.
I would not say that. I wouldn't characterize it as completely dead. I think it's a valid question that, who knows, as Mr. Reimer said, I think everything's on the table.
Right.
And as we look into the future, I don't know if an arena is a viable option.
I completely agree, but my position was until we complete this exercise, it's dead. Do you disagree with that?
It is not under consideration at this point. That's
you
correct.
You are waffling on this. Everyone else seems pretty confident. You're waffling.
I'm just... No, I think we're saying the same thing.
then we're saying it's dead until we're done with this.
It's a viable option, possibly. I don't know. I can't say. So
I'm a straight talk guy, so it's dead until we're done with this.
Mr. Reimer, anything else? I think the only thing we were looking for today is consensus that we agree that we need to evaluate the business case and then ask you to come back with some further details on how we might proceed.
So next time, council meeting, the proposal for your own your consideration. I just want to reiterate the thanks to the many groups, especially those that work for the Civic Center, as well as Experience Rochester, and the information they've provided me up to this point. So,
All right, Mr. Ruskin.
Well, I'm certainly in favor of looking at this. One of the things I'd like to see, Steve, is if we could get a kind of a pretty straight line, hard timeline on this that we can kind of know when this is going to happen, because this couple months here and a few more months there, and you know, if we could have the timeline and have this so we all know what to expect and when we can kind of see this rolling through the process, that would be helpful.
Absolutely.
All right. Anything else on this topic? Mr. Mayor?
And you just had a group here, which I was able to welcome here as well, but my observation and input that was coming from them, they were pretty impressed with the facility. Now, they were coming from all over the United States, and I mean, there was some controversy as to which team got to play in which gym, all that sort of stuff, but I know talking to some of the folks that were, you know, whether they were athletic directors or coaches, whatever, they were quite impressed, but bottom line is always the people. They are so impressed with the people here, and we can't say that enough. It is part of our, I'll always say, our DNA. We're very good at that, and thanks to Brad and the groups that they add to this, our certified tourism ambassadors, they're good when they start, and they get even better. And so we demonstrate that in there for various things that happened in the Civic Center. Most recent was the Division III women's basketball that I think we shined in there again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I might just great point, Ardell, and the Civic Center staff was wonderful. We had some people that really gave a ton of work and every detail they took care of greatly. But just to remind you about facilities. Last year they played in a brand new $29 million arena. So you know it's out there. The competitiveness is out there. Everybody's building it and going, trying to attract it to their cities because of the value of it. And I think that that needs to be kept in mind too. That you know, there is an ongoing challenge to try to bring people into towns across the country, and so at every level.
Mm-hmm. All right, anything else? All right, then, thank you. Move on to our final topic for this afternoon, which is continued review of the draft comprehensive plan. Ms. Gosley is going to step us through this, or who?
That
Perhaps what we'll do is look at kind of section one in its entirety and see if people have comments. Or do you want to start with section three?
That's what we've been working on.
All right, fine. Those are the two sections we have to work with. So section three, comments. Who wants to start?
I made it all the way to page 250, so if there's any before that, you want to do it sequentially?
Sure, we can do it by page, I guess.
Page 250, there's a bullet, the second bullet that has the amendment, the red line. I'm wondering where that language came from. It says, the policy may be waived when services extended.
What page are you on? I'm sorry.
Page 250.
That's page 4 in the section.
The thing that called
so many page numbers
was an item that was at the town meeting with regard to the city of Orinoco's need for reflecting back as to when we did the Marion Township annexation for those folks. So recognizing their, you know, there's nothing we're really looking at right now, but if something were to happen such that folks really needed to get the benefit of city services because their wells were bad, their septic systems had failed, it would give us the opportunity to provide relief to them in those limited circumstances.
So this makes me sometimes unpopular, but the semantics of this have an issue for me, is that under those conditions we can waive anything in the policy section. So to me, if we're just adding that caveat, we should leave it out to avoid everyone complaining that we need to add that caveat to everything we do. It was kind of that, to the extent feasible, change that we had to put on.
Yep.
We just moved it to the header.
And it
would be my preference basically to eliminate that change on page 250 in the second sub-bullet.
And instead do what?
Just leave it out. Because all it does is suggest that we can waive the policy if there's a health, safety, welfare, or imminent public threat. And their policies, so we can waive them for literally anything the council deems important enough to suggest waiving a policy. That's the council's perspective.
But the way I read it, I think you have to take it in context with the first sentence of that bullet, which talks about our policy is to develop in a contiguous manner. However, the second part, we can waive that if it makes sense for certain conditions, public health, et cetera. So I put it in context of the contiguous growth policy.
Yeah, and I guess my statement is just, we can say that about all the policies. So to me, I'd rather say it about none. It's an understood power of the council to waive its own policies when it decides. That's kind of the part of being the council.
I guess I'm just, we've talked about how we've gone back and forth on wordsmithing this thing, and I'm just concerned, now we're making assumptions that everybody understands that we can always waive these things if we feel necessary. I get a little bit uncomfortable in the fact that we've been fighting over words before that I felt were fine, and now here we are. I think there's a point where if it's,
yeah,
or safety and things of that nature, I have a little concern about just scratching and thinking everybody has an understanding of this.
Yeah, I mean, this is new language that was introduced in this version. This isn't language that's been seen before. So my sentiment is just, we could take that exact same clause and put it on every policy we do, and it would be no more impactful than not having it. And it leads to this idea that people can ask for waiving by trying to build a case, and like these are... So first of all, this is an enumeration of cases. It's not even exhaustive. Like there are cases that are here that can cause us to waive the policy. So we go through this effort to make everything simple, and then we introduce this kind of unnecessary clarification, in my opinion. Again, if that is the will of the majority of the council, this isn't a make or break to me. It just is something I'm concerned we'll have to address on every policy.
Okay, Mr. Wojcik.
I don't have a strong feeling on this one way or the other. The one thing I would say about it being in there is it specifies the narrow circumstances where the policy shall be waived, and those narrow circumstances are particularly reflective of the of the contiguous land use. So your point is fair. I'm not sweating it one way or the other. So that's
fine.
My take on it.
We'll all agree that I won the debate and we decided that we need to.
There we go. You won the battle, lost the war.
I like that, man.
All right. Next page or comment or?
Yeah, a couple more. On page 252, does anyone have any before that?
Anyone will have to stick their hand up if you have questions on other pages.
I'll keep going. I only have seven of them for this section. So at page 6, if you're reading along with the red line version.
I'm sorry, which page are you on again?
Page 6 of the 31 pages that are section 3, red line. Otherwise, it would be page 252 by the big box.
Okay, got it.
Okay, all right.
The
big
only reason I'm bringing this up is we had to put that same clause in again, and I wanted to have it wiped, but I'm going to leave it, so I'll move on. I have one on page 253.
Mr. Hickey?
Let's revisit the topic. I still like the idea of just going with the 22 goals. We're still tearing through all the wordsmithing these policies. I think it'd make a much cleaner document just to go with the 22 goals. And then as we implement something like the Land Development Manual, that's going to flesh out the details.
I'm still a no on that.
Yeah, I agree. I'd like to have the debate. I felt like we have it. So.
All right. Other questions, comments on that?
Well, I think we've come this far in getting to these policies that I think, you know, we've been able to work towards some agreement on them. I'm pretty impressed with all the things that have been done here. So, but there are still some that are, you know, we're not going to get everybody to agree on all of them, and that's going to be part of the challenge. So, I mean, what Mark said is more broad cover way to say this is just do it that way. But I think some specificity in this is fine. So,
I'm willing to continue as we are, as much effort as we put to get to this point. I'd like to keep it.
Okay. So with that point 3.2, which is on that page, or, I mean, are we going to keep that in there? You addressed that a little bit.
And right. Under the main heading of number 3, we just added a note letting the reader know that section 1 has things in a little bit more detail. Specifically for that one, I was going to look and see what page that was on. It's actually on page 86. In section 1.
Can you go with the big box number? Is that
86?
Hey. It is 86. Okay.
Section 1, they're the same. We're good.
So there is a graphic there that gives you some ideas as to what types of things are covered by that particular policy. And it states that it's helping to frame those concepts, not necessarily make things extremely strict at this point. Again, implementation documents are what would lead to those points.
All right, Mr. Wojcik.
So I'll insert this comment here. You know, I was looking for, you know, and I understand this is something that's still being worked on, the statement on social equity, environmental justice in section 1, and as long as we explain what in clear language what we stand behind, what we're basing this on, I'm okay with that. But if we don't have that clarity in the other section, places like 2.1 that says support all people having fair and equal access, I would change that to fair and equitable access, unless we're defining what our equitable goals are. That's the whole thing, that equality is not equity. And but I don't think we need to make that change here, so long as we have a good description on these core values somewhere in the plan.
Mr. Campion.
It's a nitpick. But we intentionally, in 1.9, and it spans pages, so I'm not sure when to inject it, eliminated the word sustainable. And sustainability has a really profound meaning in budgetary concept. So I think there's, we're looking at the impacts on the network as a whole, and we're talking about infrastructure investments, but we have these unit cost estimates and risk assessments. all that's really enveloped in this idea of fiscal sustainability. So I'd like to see sustainability put into there because that's really about the life cycle considerations. It was in the original language.
It was, and I don't know why it was taken out.
All right.
That's a Charlie question.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Anyone object to that? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Next. Next page or?
Yeah, 254.
Do you have the number of the?
Yeah, it's page 8 in the document, but page 254 in the big box.
How about like 3.8 or 4.1?
Yeah, it's 4.2.
There's too many things to reference. Yeah, it's unbelievable.
4.2. It says when feasible. Strike when feasible.
Oh, yep. We just missed that one.
Okay. You got it. That's it.
Anything else on that page or move on to another page?
I'm on 255, section 7.3. Just for the council.
Wait, question by
Mr. Can we state what we're changing or where we are? The people in the audience don't have, so they don't know what we're changing. So if we could
make
that statement, that would be helpful.
On number 4.2, the current language says, when feasible, support preservation of structures and sites that represent our community's heritage. We had made a change the last time on page 252 that says, it is recognized that these goals and policies are intended to be carried out to the maximum extent practicable, and that basically eliminates the need for having when feasible in front of every point.
Yep.
So on 4.2, I move on.
Thank you, Nick.
I am at 255, section 7.3. I prefer the language encourage here, because the time to kind of make these decisions is probably when we're drafting this document. So to say, like, consider, I'm not sure what that adds to the mix. Maybe last time we decided about consider.
Yes, that was the case.
To me, encouraging a compatible mix of housing options, community-serving institutional uses, and neighborhood-oriented retail or service uses within the neighborhood surrounding downtown seems like something we are encouraging based on the bulk of the work we're doing for Destination Medical Center and other plans we've designed for downtown. So I think encourage is actually more accurate of both what our history has been and what our direction should be. Is there 5 members to support that?
I would support it.
I'll go with you on that.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
I don't care.
Perfect.
You said that. I'm not going to see either.
But that's only 4.
I don't.
Who's nitpicking now?
No, somebody's not here.
Let me. I'll say that I don't know.
But you know what? I don't care. It's just
so I'm going to nitpick back at you.
Nick, Michael,
on 8.3. Strategic areas, it says city will encourage infill and redevelopment of strategic areas. I know we questioned that last time. Who determines strategic areas?
As I recall, the conversation was that you all will actually determine those.
But they're not pre-identified. It's,
No, because again, at this level, that's something that will come later on.
All right. I couldn't remember what we came up with on that one. I noticed it wasn't changed. Underperforming, same thing on 8.4. Who determines underperforming commercial corridors?
Again, those would be things that are coming to you, or say for the small area studies that may be done, things like that might identify, you know, just what's happening in those areas.
Okay.
I'll just let the chair know that I don't have another question until section 20, so I don't.
Cool.
Okay. Next.
I had 10.2. I just, again, increase the amount and range of housing choices available in the downtown and adjacent neighborhoods. I mean, it's kind of a big statement. How do we increase it, or is it just, I guess I'm kind of, thought again we'd asked on that one before, and there's no changes, so. All right. I'll move on.
Okay.
10.5, roadways. I have it. I noticed that we always have roadways at the end of all of our stuff, and bikeways at the beginning. Is that alphabetical or what is that?
I honestly don't know because I haven't been the person writing that one, but I have noticed that as well.
I will consent to Mr. Ruska putting in them in whatever order makes him happy.
I was just going to say, seriously, would it make sense to you all to put things like that in alphabetical order in order to not show preference?
That's fine.
I think that would be nice.
Then it'll be consistent.
As long as
that's right.
That should be noted then that there's not a priority other than
alphabetical.
All right.
Put a couple asterisks every single one, and then let's have an appendix with that line in it.
11.2, I had that we were going to make some changes to that, but I see it's not been changed.
Yeah, and I didn't have any changes noted, but I can certainly go back and take a look at that.
Look at my other notes to figure out what
I'm trying to remember what it would have been.
And even since we had this conversation last time, I don't remember what the changes were either, but we're kind of taking some of those steps now.
It says in my notes here, it says policies, it says develop and implement policies, but I guess policies for who and how it will be done. So those are the questions I had there.
And a lot of that is, you know, stuff you are starting to see coming through with the ITS studies that you had the presentation
right.
at the last meeting and things like that. So again, it gets back to that implementation piece.
Yeah, I've noticed you tied more of that stuff seemed to in this. Yeah. So, okay. 11.7, I have maximize. Question on that. I'm not sure what I meant by that, but I can get to it in a second here. All right.
Oh, do you have maximize or minimize?
For developers to maximize the impact of new development on the downtown transportation system should be what it says, correct?
Well, it depends which way you're reading it, because you want to minimize the negative impacts and maximize the positive impacts. It doesn't actually say if it's the negative or positive impacts here. So
we're just maximizing impacts.
Yeah, right. And I think that's why I didn't change it, because I realized you could read it both ways.
Yeah.
So I needed to clarify that indeed it's to maximize the
positive impact.
Yes.
You maximize the negative impacts, right?
Yeah, we don't want to do that. I don't support maximizing the negative impacts.
Okay.
Do you agree, Councilmember Ruskin?
I'm at 14.2. Is there anything that we could do with licensing or anything like that that we could put in there?
I think that would fall into that enforcement category, where it says to increase bicycle safety through education, enforcement, and physical measures.
Okay, so it would fall under enforcement.
Yeah.
Okay.
Unless you would prefer to call it out.
I don't know if it could be at the comprehensive level.
No.
State and federal laws will dictate a lot of that.
Okay. Uh, 14.4, I wondered if we could add in bicycle infrastructure into that. We have bicycle facilities and ongoing.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's one of the things that they're charged with anyway. 15.1, again, there's no mention at all about skyways. I didn't see any mention of the skyways in this at all. And we talked about, in the first section, we talked about unique characteristics of our city.
Yep, it's all in Section 2, and skyways are specifically listed in parts of Section 2 as being a component of the pedestrian system.
Okay, so. All right. I'm all the way to 19, too, in my next one, so I don't know if anybody else has anything. Nick, I can't remember what you're calling in
20.
Next. 20, okay. Nicky's taking the easy way, just eliminated everything.
Yep.
Now we change the numbers. Not going to figure out where 19, which one 19, the new 19 to.
Just think about the harmony we will have sown.
Think about that.
Where are we at?
19.
I'm looking at 19 too, but I don't see what my question is. I'm wondering,
you know, we bolded the words as appropriate, and I don't think they were bolded before, but I seem to recall we had a conversation about making it clearer that not all complete streets, pieces mm-hmm. are appropriate on every roadway.
That's fair.
Okay, maybe that's what I had. I thought we were going to take the whole thing out, but I guess we left it as appropriate then. All right, that's it for the ones that I have on the policies.
Under 20.2, I was just going to make consider use a fix it first, because we basically go through this entire document just prescribing a fix it first strategy, and then we say consider it, but I think the point of considering was building the document. I don't know if people agree with that.
I agree with that.
I have no issue with it.
Just use.
All right. Next.
That's all I have.
Okay. Anything else in section 3?
Page 269. So I talked about... I still object to adopting plans or guidelines that we don't control, especially when there's no specific version number or date, so we don't really know what we're adopting, and we don't know how it's going to change in the future. So I think we had talked about last time leaving the terminology more generic, something like best practices, but I have a great concern about adopting plans and guidelines that we don't control.
I think we had consensus.
Yeah, I thought we said to change that to consider.
Yes, I've got consider applying existing and future revisions of the NACTO.
No, I don't want to talk about a specific plan, just best practices.
Strike NACTO Urban Bikeway Design Guide and the FHWA Supplemented Bike Lanes.
Perfect.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing that we talked about, I'm fine with that, because that would be more appropriately to be spelled out in a bicycle master plan anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And my understanding would be that any 5 council members can amend this to include any plan that 5 council members agree on at any time. So, again, if we get that, if we spend some time studying it and all agree that this is what to do, then we just incorporate it.
Mm-hmm. It's go ahead. Same thing on 272. Just bullet under, first bullet under street topology, just... striking the specific guidelines.
Under street, which one?
So there's a bullet under street topology.
272.
On page 272.
Okay.
I'm actually back on 271 because it's 275 in the old book. The complete corridors and streets, we talked about dropping all that, and all we did was drop just the middle one.
We dropped the middle one.
And I had here that we agreed to drop all 3 of them. Just drop that off completely. It refers to it enough times.
Is this covered in other sections?
I'm trying to think.
Yeah.
There's some other place we can point at where it clearly says we're going to continue to execute that, and this is redundant, okay, but if this is non-redundant, it's the only place where we're calling out our continued dedication to that program. I think it's pretty
I'll come at you with another angle then. We talked to, the other day about not eliminating any vehicle lanes for bicycle support. If we could put that in here, then that would kind of balance that out a little bit.
I'd support that.
No. There's just so many there's so many places where that's the correct decision, and
I thought we agreed we weren't going to do that.
We
in the
did
DMC,
not
for the DMC area.
In just the DMC area.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we did. There was more to it than that. There was more discussion than that.
Just coming to work with you.
I know. that one's a non-starter. There, I just
you never know until you ask.
You got to try it right now.
No, and I if you made a more generalized statement that the the prime roadways that move people into and out of the key areas, I mean, I would probably agree with you in pretty much all circumstances that you wouldn't want to reduce lanes there.
Okay, let us work on that.
So,
I was just going to comment too that, you know, again, the whole thing with complete streets policy is evaluating what things are appropriate on what roads. So, again, a lot of these studies may show that it isn't appropriate to do that.
Like
but without
drive.
That study, you know,
Second Street. No.
I pushed against having bike lanes in the St. Mary's area on Second Street. So,
Mr. Hickey.
So before
before
we slide past this, I mean, I think he brings up an important point. I mean, is there any appetite to look for some language that can clarify what we're trying to do here? Because I think as it's, you know, as it's written right now, I think.
How about this? I have an idea, and I'm good at finding language. We always caveat everything we're doing with bike infrastructure with a clause as appropriate. So what if we say maintaining drive lanes as appropriate? We add that caveat all over the place that basically enables staff to come back with what's appropriate to the situation and suggest it to us. That to me covers exactly the situation we just laid out. What I'm a little bit concerned about is trying to get an exclusive for road lanes that says we're going to universally say road lanes, but we're only going to, as appropriate, do things like add sidewalks and other things. Yeah. That's not an equivalent, that's not equivalent language to use.
Mr. Nigber, have some comment?
Really, your complete streets policy does exactly what you're saying. You're supposed to use that policy to guide your decision making. So. Your first bullet point says continue to use that. That's really your answer. And whether you guys choose to
not
use
all
that
this
or
like
not,
it.
Well, but you, the council decision to choose to use that or not, that answer.
That's why there's only four bullets.
Mr. Hickey, then Mr. Lozier.
So, you know, I've made this point before. I mean, the actual complete streets policy is fine. It's how we're executing it. And the bicycle master plan, I think, has a lot of problems. There's an example of someone apparently thought that bicycle master plan was an appropriate use for a complete streets policy. Complete streets policy talks about providing balance and providing more options for people for multimodal transportation, not choking down streets. And so I would, right now I would prefer more specific language.
No. Mr. Ojek?
And I'm not going to support the kind of restrictive language that you're interested in. I understand you feel strongly about that. I don't think that's where the where the community is. A lot of times you talk about choking down streets in places where there are additional reasons why it was done for safety reasons. I would prefer to have the professional engineers who have the knowledge, training, and expertise continue to make those decisions in terms of when they're appropriate and not try to force the issue with language here. Back to the point that there were three bullets here, one was stricken. I actually think that the last bullet could be stricken because that's something that, as we review the bicycle master plan, is more appropriate there. And the only thing I would say about the first one, I think it's important to have something because we have a complete streets policy, but we don't have a complete corridors policy. So the one thing I'd like to at least maintain in this section, that it's not about putting a lane or a sidewalk in any one particular place. It's really about making sure that you're able to get from point A to point B safely on whatever mode it is. And that's where complete streets doesn't get into, and that's the complete corridors concept. Because we've got lots of places right now where we have some bike lanes there, but they're not really usable because they're missing a key connection. And as you address those missing pieces, you get much better connectivity out of it. So I'm okay with striking the third bullet and simply leaving the first one in there and, which is stating that we're going to use a policy, which is currently a policy, which is shouldn't be that that controversial, but also adding that the goal here is really corridors that move people around, not just individual streets.
Well, I think safely, it's not good to interact and interweave them in all these different plans that we have here. I think if we're really talking about safety, keeping the majority of them off the majority of the roads is the safer way. So, whether it's disconnected paths or similar. So That's part of the problem.
I understand that's your belief. The belief of the cycling community and pedestrian community is different than that.
And well, because you said they want to go their own routes, and that's part of it. We're trying to accommodate a lot of people with a lot of different answers. So.
But we still have to get them through the downtown.
Right.
And the problem is you can't make...
Yeah, and that's going to be a challenge.
It's a challenge, right. But I think that's where you have to give and take a little bit.
We don't disagree on the corridor concept, right? I mean, it seemed like we had a moment where we all agreed on the corridors. Like, it's a iteration of the complete street policy is then to take a look and go, prioritize investment that complete corridors. So passageway through downtown, that's a better option than making a whole bunch of small and disparate investments.
Anyone think that we need to keep that third bullet in there? I'm fine with if we just lose that one.
I think we should clearly indicate we're closed to new ideas.
That was what it was.
I mean, yeah, I don't think we... I think that a lot of what I'm hearing about issues with the current bike infrastructure and pedestrian facilities actually calls for more of that, not less. More new ideas on what we're doing and not less new ideas on what we're doing. So I'd like to keep it because obviously we haven't solved this yet. We're still debating the efficacy of multimodal transit. I mean, that's essentially what we're at.
So it says be open to new ideas such as bicycle boulevards and shared streets. Bicycle boulevards is First Street Southwest through Kutsky Park, and shared streets is what we're talking about for Discovery Lock. So thus far we've been open to them.
All right.
So just to clarify, so since you've been discussing this complete corridors thing, does that mean you want the second bullet back in?
At this point, I would just
leave it as it is.
Leave it.
So, Sandy, are you clear on the changes we're making to that section?
My question is just getting sort of the consensus as to how you feel about the comment Mr. Kempkin made about maintaining the drive lanes as appropriate. Do you want that specifically called out, or, you know, truly that is what Complete Streets policy is. So it's not necessary to have that language unless you feel it needs to be called out.
I would be willing to add that language to the Complete Streets policy if it's not there. I would not want to add it here.
So, where would you like to go?
Next page.
Okay.
Just to confirm, we're leaving that as is.
Leave it as is.
Therefore, good job, Sam.
And then go for it.
Other comments, questions, other additional pages?
274.
274, okay.
We've talked about this before. Under general criteria applicable to all proposed updates and amendments, all updates and amendments must meet the following criteria in order to be approved. We've talked about this before. I mean, this council can't dictate what changes a future council can make. As Mr. Campin pointed out, if there's five council members who would like to strike the entire document, they can do that. So to me, we can't have that wording in there. So we could have language that says we should consider these criteria, but we can't dictate that a future council can't make changes to the document that we approve.
How about we change must to should? Then we're just finger waving.
We're starting to get to legal matter. Yeah. When we're making an amendment, what do we just have to have a set of criteria that are considered as part of that to make legal findings to justify the amendment? Because, I mean, this basically here is the legal justification of an amendment. I agree with you.
It doesn't need to be a legal justification.
Five members can do whatever they want.
Correct.
But is it? But it also, there's something to be said to having these findings. So if we get taken to court, we have findings that support why we made a change. Is that?
That's generally preferable. Yeah.
Or why we didn't make a change, which is probably the more likely one that we'd be taken to court on.
Well, should consider.
No. Better look at the city attorney on this one.
Okay. Still on 274.
No, I don't know what you have to
what
you're
talking about, what you exactly requirement.
We're talking about just right underneath the general criteria.
Of okay. Well, we have a structure
state.
Got it.
Yeah.
We'll follow up with that.
Yep. All updates and amendments.
Yeah. All right. Any other pages? In section 3?
Jeez. Unless somebody hit the cash register.
Did you win the lottery?
All right.
But yeah.
So, are you ready to look at section 1? And same approach. Do you have specific pages where there are comments? Mr. Hickey.
I'll just make a comment on page 6, the box text that you highlighted. I really appreciate that. I think it's important that we got this up front and summarized in a clear fashion. So page 6, excellent change. And wanted to throw that out there.
Thank you.
Okay. Other pages? Mr. Ruska.
Let me get my bearings here. A lot of pages.
Can I just make a comment?
Yep, go ahead.
Getting ready. And I will say, I mean, obviously with all these changes and restructuring, it's, you know, the tremendous challenge, but the change bars and lining don't really correlate, so it's kind of a fresh read, but I know you guys had a lot of work to do.
Yes, it's just as difficult for us looking at all of that stuff too, so
right.
I apologize for that.
All right, Mr. Ruskin.
On page 58, the first bullet is the 25 persons per acre minimum average. I don't remember that before, so.
Page 28.
58.
All right, what was your comment again?
Transit.
page of my own.
Yeah, it's different from my page 58.
Okay, page 41, I'm sorry, in the big,
okay.
Big box.
Oh,
41.
Went past that.
I know. This is different than that.
This makes more sense.
There,
yes.
And there's other there's page numbers on there. It's, oh.
Yes.
You're talking about the first bullet?
Right.
Yep.
So I don't remember that being in there before. Is that?
It's actually, that was moved there. That stuff had been in section 2.
Okay.
And we felt, because of questions that had arisen amongst you, as well as things from the public and RAV and stuff, we chose to sort of streamline that, bring it into section 1, and eliminate that from section 2.
Okay.
So it's setting up as an introduction, then when you get to section 2 to read more about transit-oriented development and stuff, you'll have a better handle on, you know, what the preliminary things you need to consider. So none of that is new language, it's just moved.
Okay. Mr. Hickey?
Yeah, I've got a question back on page 16.
Yep.
So on the street maintenance, we've talked about this at the COW here a few times. So obviously for deferred maintenance, we still have a huge problem. But just in quantifying it and trying to get a handle on it, we have the figure that streets need to be completely reconstructed every 50 to 60 years. And the last time I asked the question, you know, with the process of mill and overlay, unless there's a breakdown in the underlying soils, why couldn't we just do continuous mill and overlay? And I think the last time I asked that question, Richard answered, you know, the curb and gutter may break down, but then I would say we do curb and gutter. So I just, again, it's still a huge problem, but I don't understand why the reference to completely reconstructing streets every 50 to 60 years, given the process we have now for mill and overlay.
Mr. Wojcik?
So two things on this. The last time when Richard answered that, he actually said that it was the sub base that needed to be replaced. That's the justification for the replacement of the entire road. And more importantly, though, you know, this is the accepted engineering practice in the industry right now. And I would be hesitant to to specify something else. I think that this is realistic, and if technology changes, that's great. But Richard did tell us that it was the sub-base that was failing at that point.
Actually, he said if the sub-base fails at 50 to 60 years. So if it doesn't. So, again, I don't know that it's worth, I'm not going to throw down over it, but I just think I'd like some more clarification, because if we're going to take the time to put it in there, I think it should be accurate.
We should verify with Public Works that it's accurate.
When it says generally, too, so it's not saying it's...
It says typically.
Yeah.
That's what we're basing our...
Oh, down for... I'm looking at early on. The first part of the paragraph, it talks about streets generally require, and so...
Typically
reconstruct, so...
Mr. Ruska?
Sandy, I know one of the things we talked about with the infrastructure here, it looked like you added the park department's 20-year master plan into this. Is that... I'm trying to see what page it is now. It's got three different page numbers on here.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Is that page 102 or...
Jeff Eller Bush has been doing some research on things that were adopted as part of the comp plan and things that weren't, and I think that's how Charlie added that in. If that is not correct, please let us know that.
Right. It's I provided information which I thought was going to be shared with the city attorney or somebody. I wanted all the votes on everything that had ever been taken on the history of the comprehensive plan. Put all together. A list of the documents that were adopted with the specification that they are part of the comprehensive plan.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Whether there was a vote that was 5/7 or more. And obviously the Parks and Rec Department plan was never considered by the city in that fashion. So that is one plan that wasn't, but historically and typically over the years, we've always supported that concept that the planning of the Parks Board was a direction of the city. If it becomes a legal argument as to whether it should be considered part of the comprehensive plan or not, I thought that the openness was the fact that you could say it was when you adopt this document, if you'd like to do it at this time. Mm-hmm. But it is, the park board has this unique status.
By charter, we're authorized, the park board is authorized to plan and control the parks. When we got this planning document through the park board at the end of 2016, the then city attorney and deputy city attorney got us in that document processing for approval, saying this is the proper venue for that. So again, as Jeff has said, though, if you can tie back to the comprehensive plan by including that reference, if you find good to choose that.
Well, and the reason I ask is I think it's mentioned under the emphasized fiscal sustainability. It seems like I read it somewhere. It's on that prioritize existing infrastructure maintenance, and it addresses things like the water system, sewer system, stormwater, electric, you know, all the things that we see. And then it also says, and park and recreation facilities. And so I would think that plan should be tied into this also, because that helps us to identify that fiscal sustainability for the Parks Department, but it's not referenced. You know, that, I'd make sure that ties in somehow. So,
Mr. Wojcik?
I agree with... I think that plan passed 7-0 when it came before the council. So rather than have this nebulous area, why don't we adopt it as part of the comprehensive plan as well, that document as it stands? Then there's no question as to whether or not it's part of the comprehensive plan.
The only thing I'd caution you on is the intent when we adopted that plan in 2016, there's going to be a dynamic document, meaning it's not going to stay static forever. So we're going to go back and review this every several years and probably make tweaks on it.
Yep.
Do you then want this to come back to council again?
Yeah, I think it should end. I mean, this should be a dynamic document, much more than we saw from our last comp plan.
The park plan as well.
Yeah, and I mean, ultimately the funding's coming from this body anyway. So, I am all about updating these documents whenever appropriate.
Mr. Ruskin.
Well, and Sandy, I know on page 67 here you added the electricity aspect. You have your comment obtained from RPU, and that's kind of a nice summary of some of the things that they think. I wonder if we could just maybe do an executive summary or something from that resource or whatever to put into this and to tie it in, that kind of ties into their infrastructure needs in the future. So just something I kind of noticed. It seemed like they were kind of left out of this, that yet they were identified as one of our responsibilities to plan for.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Campion, you had a comment?
Just was going to state my support of that change.
All right.
along so good.
Yes.
Never finished the comment about the plans. One of the plans that you adopted specifically as part of the comprehensive plan and voted on it that way. The downtown master plan, the Second Street Corridor plan, the hazard mitigation plan, and that's it. And then the question was, those were acted on that way. The energy action plan was not. It was not voted on as an addition to the comprehensive plan, and it didn't have a...
Mr. Ruska?
I'd like to have the ones that we are going to refer to listed here so we know, and I think the Second Street Corridor that was taken out, the Energy Commission one was added in here, and the Energy Plan was, and the Parks Department one is mentioned, so I think some clarification on that would be good for us to know which, whether they're attachments or just reference to, should be part of this.
I did notice with the Second Street Corridor plan not being in there, but I wonder with where we're at on Phase 4 of the Second Street design and the other... the DMC design guidelines and the transit stuff that were initiated in, if that's just a conscious decision to remove,
yeah,
does that have
I
any...
I can't remember if that was a debate or not.
I requested
that
it.
So far down the pipe that
I requested
there's
it.
Not enough
yeah.
level.
Yeah,
but
because it wasn't initiated by the city, and so it was just, you know, it wasn't done by the city, it was just brought forward to the city. And so,
it is,
and with all the
yeah.
stuff at St. Mary's Place and everything that's going on now, I don't know that it's even...
It's,
The only caveat with that, I don't know if this changes at all, but at some point with the changes that we're talking about, the right-of-ways, we do need to get that official map moving on that. So,
Separate action.
Yeah.
Okay. Next. Mr. Akuta.
Now page 83. So I still have some concerns about the incorporating our health policies into the comprehensive plan. I see a graphic here, vaccines, our top five community health priority vaccines, overweight, obesity. So, so the city, we're going to promote vaccination programs as a top five priority, or how does this, I don't see how this ties in with what we're talking about.
The reason this graphic was included in here was to let you know what the top health priorities are, and mainly it's to focus on the overweight and obese, as well as the mental health and the financial stress. Vaccines are more of a medical thing, but the final three really tie more into initiatives that we actually work with the health staff on as well, to come up with. They'll pick our brains about, well, how can we do things differently to try and help people obtain housing or have less financial stress or get people out moving and stuff and work with Parks and Rec and other groups on things like that.
Mr. Wojcik?
And I do want to maintain the public health portions. I think it's important that they be in there. And how we design the city does have an effect on... injury prevention and the three that we've talked about, but also because the City County Health Board is this has been a big part of their contribution to the plan.
All right, Mr. Hickey.
And I still have questions on that. Promote page 85, promote access to healthy food. We're going to improve household proximity to healthy food. Increase food production and access to healthy food in residential settings. So, is that really our policy? We're going to go back?
Well, and I think the fact is we've talked about transportation, and our transportation is going to allow people to get to the food, and the healthier food choices. This is all stuff we've talked about in our transportation study, and I think it's stuff that we wish to encourage or should encourage since we're going to be a city of health.
Yeah, it doesn't say that, though. It says increase food production and access to healthy foods in residential
access.
Settings.
Yep.
So, I don't know. So how are we going to increase food production in residential settings?
Well, we have the neighborhood gardens now. We have those throughout the city where neighborhoods have taken vacant lots and opened it up for people to come and grow gardens. We've turned around and done that in some of our city parks. So we've done that through a lot of programs through the Our Neighbors Oversees It. So we have done that, encouraged healthier foods in the neighborhoods as well as the transit.
Mr. Campion.
Yeah, and can. I think there's a number of ways to address this. We could fund a set of additional grants through our neighbors to supply composting or to encourage composting or doing stuff like that. Like, it is not always literally the city going and buying food or going to buy land and producing food. So I think if we agree that having increased production and access to healthy foods in the residential setting is good, there's a number of ways to achieve this, and staying out of the specifics of how we're going to achieve it in this document, I think is important. This document is more about what do we want to work on as a council. And to me, I think that's fully justified.
Mr. Wojcik?
And a couple of particulars that we'd also have the ability to do is if we identify food deserts or connectivity issues to healthy food, we can prioritize infrastructure projects to bridge those gaps, and we can also, when considering incentive restricted or variances, compare that against the plan and realize that these unmet needs are something that the city can perhaps be negotiating on.
I mean, as we've talked about a number of times about our TIF and how we're going to apply TIF, and if there is a lack of objectives that we're trying to create, it creates a vacuum when people are trying to apply the TIF standard to say, maybe we're not universally willing to subsidize housing anywhere. Maybe now it has to be, we add a new criteria that says you have to justify it by looking at these criteria. I just think that there's a wealth of information this empowers the development community and the general community to know about what the objective is here.
Okay, next. Anything else? Then we're done with section one.
It's like you do how long it would take.
Mr. Wojcik?
So, question for staff. I've asked this one once or twice before. Are we still on pace for approval on April 2nd?
Yeah, we just talked about it briefly here. It seems like you can get the changes incorporated that you discussed tonight.
Yeah.
Section 2 is predominantly figure and map updates, and so
we'll anticipate
that there's a lot of discussion on that.
We are anticipating we will get the revised Section 2 to you all in the next couple of days. So.
Okay. All right.
That has the near-term, long-term map in that section, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to get the fix I've requested a number of times about some of the land that's south of 75th Street, north of 65th Street?
We have asked that question.
Oh, to?
The Public Works.
Is that in regards to?
I'd like to see an explanation, because it'll probably be something I can't digest during like that had time to talk about.
All right.
That's all I have.
Anything else? Mr. Wojcik?
Two items. One, I see that Javon Bay is looking to get his fees reduced up on 18th and 55th. On the surface, I don't support that and would just ask that that would be brought to the council for discussion and the vote should that happen. Second item is last year we passed our... We passed a resolution opposing preemption at the state level. Is that do we feel that we need to pass that again, or does it stand as is? I'm fine with it. It's just fine the way it is for me. So.
It's highlighted today on the league's website. I just saw where
okay.
it registers this.
Okay.
The league sent something on.
Yeah, I was going to just point that out what Steve just indicated in the latest edition here, the LNC bulletin that points that out and indicates Rochester was one of the 93 cities that did prepare a resolution last year, so I don't know if we have to rehash that again.
No, a couple of reasons why I asked. So I'm going to go up to, I'm going to be speaking at the Senate office tomorrow on a preemption bill against it, and I just wanted to make sure we were all on the same page. And the other thing that, and this bothers me, and I'm going to make this request to Council President Staver and to City Administrator Reimer, that we again had a group from the City of Rochester, in this case, Experienced Rochester Convention Visitors Bureau up there advocating for preemption bills. which bothers me to know. We should not be having this discussion anymore. This was particularly they were going after the preempting wages, preempting paid sick leave, but we oppose preemption in general, and we need to communicate that using taxpayer funds to speak against the policies of the city council is not wise and prudent. And I'm very concerned about that, and I'm also very concerned about them using their voice to try and reduce the wages for tipped employees, because if there's one thing we don't need in Rochester, it's having our poor people that are struggling to find housing become poorer. So these are issues that I'd ask you two to bring that back to the Convention and Visitors Bureau Board and address as is appropriate.
So one of the challenges, I had this problem with the last legislative session. I certainly don't want to preempt local control, and I agree with the majority of it. The problem with the legislature, of course, is they try to put everything in a bundle, and I personally don't agree that on the preemption of minimum wage and paid leave, though I don't personally want that at the local level. So
you don't want us to have the choice, or you don't want it here?
I don't want it here.
You don't want it, but do you want us to have the choice, or do you want to take the choice?
I don't want that choice. That's my personal opinion. But again, the majority of what they talk about with preemption, absolutely I agree that I want local control and decision making, but not on the entirety of everything they were proposing, and that's where we get into kind of a dilemma with this all-encompassing legislation, Mr. Campion.
But correct me if I'm wrong, the city or the lodging tax is the biggest financing aspect of the Experience Rochester Group.
That's the only one.
So because they leverage that money, and the conduit for having access to that is the city, I think directly countermanding a ratified position of the city is very concerning to me.
Yep.
Personal opinions notwithstanding, the ratified public position of the city is in objection to preemption. I would have a very significant problem with an organization that we fund as the primary participant going in and lobbying against these organizations. It would be, frankly, no different than an organization like Public Works going in and lobbying against our stated position. I think we have to have, you know, in their case, I think it's the right political decision to stay out of lobbying. I don't think that should be something they do when you're using tax dollars to go and lobby legislators. I think that's a really significant, concerning activity that we need to take a serious look at.
Well, I think it's a little bit of a slippery slope, because you'd have to apply that policy to all the groups. So just making up an example, so you would object to the art center or civic theater going up to the legislature and advocating for or against some particular arts bill.
Okay, I just want to be clear. I only have a problem when it runs counter to a ratified official position of the city. That is the standard that we should apply. Any group that wants to is perfectly welcome to, you know, the arts center. It's just then they would not be eligible for funding for the city. I think that should be a component of the agreement.
Yes.
Mr. Ruskin.
Well, I sit in the board meetings. I don't remember that being an agenda item. So maybe at Rochester State, you know, the Capitol, there was some talk of that, but I don't know that that's a big legislative issue. But I think that maybe we should get both sides of the story before we go beating that up too much. But, you know, I mean, I would think it's fair that if we have a certain stand that we have, we don't want groups out there countering that we work with.
And I would also say to anyone participating in that event, your personal perspective on whether or not you support that is separate from the organizational's perspective. Mm-hmm. So as long as they're not representing the organization and saying the organization's position runs counter to the city, that's
right.
The clear
right.
line in my
yeah,
mind.
Yeah, and I think that needs to be maybe clarified a little bit. So.
Can you gather that for us? No. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Ruskin.
Well, I have just one other thing. I'd like to thank the planning department for, you know, we put a lot of requests into this stuff. And I think there's been a lot of progress on this, and I appreciate the time that was taken, not only by your staff, but especially by Ms. Baker, who spent a lot of time going over this stuff with us and explaining things. And I wish she was here to be part of this, because she's put a lot of work into it, and frankly, I'm not real happy that she's not.
I would go so far as I would ask that we put that as an item for discussion 2 weeks from today, if that's all right with the council. just an update on what's going on with planning and how we're going to work on that relationship between the city and the county. It would be April 9th.
I would ask Mr. Reimer if discussions, and probably with your counterpart, Heidi, whether you have anything to bring forward or...
It'll be very conceptual. The DSC asked us last week to return on May 11th, I believe it was the date.
Yeah,
Friday, May 11th.
That's correct.
It's more in-depth. So the next could be a check-in. It'll probably be just conceptually, this is what we're thinking. I know that the team's meeting this week. The three areas we're looking at is the operational side, financing, and governance. So.
Okay. So when you're ready, bring it forward.
Yeah, we maybe within the next X, and then can we have some...
Okay. I'm okay with, if it's, we suggested April 9th, but as long as we get a date,
yeah,
that's
well,
reasonable.
If we meet this week, we'll find one to come back and make our
meeting. Mr. Campion.
I've given and worked through PASC to give the guidance I feel best represents the barometer of the council on the matter. I would also advocate for bringing it back for discussion earlier, sooner rather than later. Obviously, emerging events and situations color everyone's worldview and decisions about what they think might be feasible and advisable for this particular debate. I would rather reassess the council's bearing before moving too far down the path that we might be headed. Just wholly admitting that I know that these situations and experiences will probably have some impact on where people want to steer.
It is difficult because even in private, I was told that matters are on a need to know basis and that I did not need to know, and I can't accept that.
I agree.
All right. Anything else for today? Then we're adjourned. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for all your work on the...
We don't agree all the time.
I agree. No. You know, we actually agree most of the time.
It was nice to meet you.
Hey, can I do a quick interview?
What do you want to talk about?
Have a good week, sir.
Yeah, just in case.